logo ever. Clearly done on like a Microsoft 286 using the Microsoft Paint program. And
that's
a really
so
twitchy,
sad.
Trembly hand.
Oh. Oh, like she made it herself?
Yeah. Not like she made it herself.
Oh.
That's straight off the PC at home.
Be a program director.
I know you've rejected my previous 15 air checks. Please not to see my new stylishly designed logo. And then it really is... It is as though some 5-year-old with a terrible palsy of some kind was given a crayon and then just... across the page. Radio. All right. Field of Dreamers. All right, it's 1:38 after the hour of 11, and it's the month of October in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. My friends, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 970. If you want, you can also email us. It is rick@rickemerson.com with your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your what have you. It is rick@rickemerson.com. All right. Oh, we don't have any Chris today. That's right. Did we ever get the list from Chris of the things that were stolen from his abode?
No.
Well, he's probably just given up. He really is right, as much as I hate to say that. It's like it's Southeast. If something gets stolen, and it's one of two things. It's immediately taken to the pawn shop, or it's just immediately taken to, like, if it's my truck, it's taken to Beaverton or something. So, anyway. Well, regrettably, we will not be hearing from Chris today, nor ever again.
No, we'll hear from him at the end of the show.
I suppose. I guess I'm supposed to still do the list, and then he's going to tally it, he'll track things at the end of the program. All right. Well, today, and we have two of them today. Scotty, now you have to listen because this is the segment of the program where I'm empowering you. I am empowering you to help keep the program on track. I'm empowering you to help us, to help me give stuff away here. Because I got the... Because it doesn't start till this weekend, the media thing that's tonight. Are you going to the Star Wars thing? Oh, you get the Killers tonight. You're not going to be able to go to that. You're going to miss where science meets imagination at OMSI.
Backstage passes to the Killers. For the Star Trek exhibit.
For
Star Wars.
Yeah, okay, fine. So the media thing, the press tour for the OMSI thing is tonight, and then it opens to the public on Saturday. So today we have not one, but two Star Wars things to give away. We have, it's a pair of passes to see the OMSI Star Wars display / exhibit that opens this coming weekend, paired with a double disc DVD of Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, featuring both a theatrical version from 1983, and the special edition, which no one really cares about. So we have one of those to give away. We did not get to it. We'll get to both of those today. So I'm going to try to do one. And Scotty, this is the thing you really got to stay on me about. I'm going to try to do one of those this hour. Because I never do any giveaways in the first hour. And then, as I said yesterday, it always ends up just being like 2:55. And then I was just end up doing like caller number 9 or some crap. And it sounds lame. And it completely shuts out anybody who's listening for like the first 3.5 hours. So I'm going to try to do one of those this hour. One of them later on. I'll do it at the bottom of the hour, maybe, and I'll tie it into this story that somebody sent me yesterday. We'll find out which female celebrity was referred to by one of Sarah Dillon's friends as a crack whore. We have the Week in Geek coming up today. I got the definitive list of toys that your children are going to be badgering you for. Another reason to be glad that I have not reproduced, by the way, because as soon as Halloween, it's not even Thanksgiving anymore. It's really the first couple weeks of October where they start cranking out all the advertisements that are designed to jack your children up into little toy badgering machines. So I've got the list. Is it possible that in 2006, one of the top 10 toys is still an Elmo doll? Yeah. Well, whatever. So we've got that. We'll get to that. We have CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy, who will be joining us today to talk about New Orleans, which is one of those places, because we haven't talked about what we're doing for the holidays. Tim and I are here over Thanksgiving. You're going to be gone for a couple days around Thanksgiving. And then I'm unsure about what we're doing for Christmas. I think that Lara has flat out demanded that I got to be gone for a couple days around that.
Thank God. You need
I'm going
to
be gone
for
a couple days, too.
I resisted.
That means you get Christmas off?
Well, there's no point. I mean, it's like if Tim is gone, the show, I suppose, can limp along.
You just made my mom very happy.
I mean, if you're gone, I suppose, the show. But you both are gone, then it's just me sitting here talking to you.
You can do it.
If I really cared. If I was really motivated, I could do it.
That would be the scariest show ever.
No.
You sitting in a room by yourself with your own thoughts?
Sitting here with no checks, no pay. It would just be me and Scotty, because I'd make Scotty stay here. So it would just be Scotty and I sitting in a room over the Christmas holidays like John Carpenter's The Thing at the end, just staring at each other in the Arctic. So sometime around Christmas, I'm going to be gone for a couple days. And the only reason I'm mentioning this is because the last time I went out of town for Christmas, which was, like 2 years ago, Christmas of 2004, I think. I don't think I went anywhere. I think I was just at home being unemployed and depressed last December.
So 2004 is when you went to New York, right?
No, it's when I went to San Francisco.
Okay.
Last year, I just didn't have the heart to go anywhere. Because I realized something last year when I was when we were still in the midst of the great unpleasantness 2.0. The last Christmas, I think, was the first Christmas I had ever been unemployed. I don't think I'd ever been unemployed at Christmas. Now, don't get me wrong. I've been unemployed many, many, many times. But I don't think I'd ever been jobless at Christmas. And I got to tell you, that's a special strain of depression. That's a special kind of deep, dark blackness within your soul. You're sitting there flipping by on television, everybody advertising high-priced consumer goods you couldn't possibly afford. Everywhere you go, there seem to be, you know, the people buying plasma. Doesn't matter. So I just sat there and lost. Do you want to go somewhere for Christmas? No. I don't deserve to go anywhere. Let's just stay at home and wear sackcloth and ashes. So I went nowhere. But in Christmas of 2004, the reason I'm bringing all this up is that Christmas of 2004, she did this thing where she kind of sprung a holiday on me where she didn't tell me where we were going to go. And the thing is that the gimmick was that I didn't know where we were going for Christmas until we got to the airport, and then it was San Francisco, which is cool. And I know that she's toying with doing the same thing again this year. She's picking some mystery destination for us when we're out of town. But I know that one of the places that she's toying with is New Orleans, which seems like a really bad idea to me. It does seem, as the kids on FARC would say, to be too soon for that. And I'm all for revitalizing a lagging economy. And I'm all, you know, I think it's part of some buy low, sell high mentality of hers. That somehow it's going to be, I mean, I don't really know, and so I don't want to sit and pass judgment about a place that I don't know, I've never gone to, and don't know anything about. All I really know about it is what I see in the news, and what I see in the news involves a lot of killing and things being destroyed. And it didn't seem like it was really a crime-free area to begin with. So, we'll talk to Ed McCarthy later on, largely so I can determine whether or not I should go there over the holidays. Lisa Goddard will join us. We'll talk about our good friend Kim Jong-il and his nuclear ambitions. That's all coming up today. Plus some other crap. Nipple emails, of course, because it's impossible now to go a single day without getting emails about Sarah. Let me just tell you this, though. No, you don't even know. Listen to this.
I wish I would have never brought it up.
No, that's not true. I mentioned yesterday that we're getting emails now from people inside the company who wish to remain nameless, who have experience in the past with people, and it's always with women. See, it makes me wonder if this is a thing that ever happens to men, or if this is some sort of a condition that purely, I don't say afflicts, it's not like you have leprosy, but it's a thing that purely, I mean, anyway, so this email says, as a fan of the show, I am speaking for millions of Rick Emerson listeners who need more information on having no nipples, or, as the scientists call it, nipplelessness. I feel it is my public duty to call out all of your fans to provide you with as much information on this topic as possible. Obviously, pictures are easier to read, so that would be the preferred form. But first-hand accounts will do as well. For the love of God, if you love America and our rights to freedom, this information must be made public to strengthen the fiber of this country. Just remember, Rick, freedom isn't free. There is a hefty friggin' fee. Please be talking about nipplelessness. So we'll get to that. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How was your birthday revelry last night, part two?
It was fun. Went to the montage and then sang drunken karaoke at Chopsticks.
Excellent. And your karaoke go-to song of choice is?
Well, I sing Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Yeah, of course.
Sang Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone. Don't You Want Me? I sing a bunch, because that's the best thing about Chopsticks on a Monday night is that nobody was there.
No one cares.
Yeah.
Embarrass yourself with impunity.
I know.
Who was I talking to the other day that was making the observation that it's some law, and it is true, that all women have to sing Total Eclipse of the Heart. That is the go-to karaoke song for all women everywhere in America. I don't even know who made that observation. Some guy was saying that it is completely true. Anyway,
it's very fun to sing.
The montage is great because everything there is just deep fried.
I have to say, I was really impressed. They were really, because we had a pretty big party and they were really accommodating and we got our food really quickly and it was great.
Yeah. No, every
had a good time.
That place has never met anything that they did that they couldn't improve by rolling in batter and then just frying in grease.
I had deep fried buttermilk chicken. It was the most awesome thing I've ever had.
How's your heart?
And then slathered in garlic mashed potatoes.
Slathered is a great word. Nothing, here's one of your rule, kids. Nothing that is slathered in anything is good for you. You write that down. You keep that in a little laminate inside your pocket. Anytime somebody offers you anything slathered, just realize that you are now. Do you ever have food where you can really, that's like when we eat a carafe. I can literally just feel it taking minutes off my life. It's like the Halloween tree, that Ray Bradbury story, where at the end he goes, you know, everybody has to sacrifice a year of their life to save their friend Pip. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, when you eat some of that food, like, there's some timer somewhere. Now, you can't see it most of the time, but there is lurking in the cosmos a timer that is ticking off how many moments you've got until you take a dirt nap. And when you have some of that food, man, it goes down by like a factor of two. People are saying that New Orleans is now is more expensive. Well, it's probably more expensive than before because they're trying to get, you know, because it's a numbers game. Because there aren't enough tourists going to New Orleans, and so they got to charge more to the people who are going there. Whatever. We'll find out. Tim Riley's working on the following stories at the Ministry of Truth today.
I was just a stupid rumbling of a drunkard, admits Mel Gibson to Diane Sawyer.
No.
The world breathes a sigh of relief after little Kim Jong-il's bomb may have been a dud. The world breathes another sigh of relief after learning Paris Hilton and Nicole Simpson have made up.
Thank God.
And Keith Olbermann's MSNBC audience increases 69%.
And you know why that is, too? That's because those end-of-show speeches that he's been doing about George W. Bush, which are genius, by the way. We ought to be playing some of those, but it's
on another network.
Those things are fantastic, though. I'm not a guy, I wasn't really a SportsCenter fan. I don't really know a whole lot about Keith Olbermann, apart from, you know, kind of what I've seen him do on the countdown, which is a show that I didn't really watch for a long time. There was nothing to set that guy aside. But I feel like there's some sort of blood in the water sensation about this administration. We're going to talk to Lisa Goddard later on this hour about Korea and some other things as well. But there is a sort of sense that I think that people, the press really kind of follows the electorate on this, and there does it. We had some story today, like, say, that we'll get to this later, something like 78% of the American public feel like the Republicans knew about the Foley thing or covering up the Foley thing or whatever. Like 64% of people think that the Iraq War is just a big cluster F, so we'll get to all of that. Let's see. And, well, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but I have this song. We're going to play this later on today because we've got two musical segments we're going to do today. One is we've got today's top five. We will do... I scrapped the top five we were going to do yesterday because what's the point, really? Because I was looking at the intro to it and actually did date from the Rockstar Supernova era, and it's just... I just got to move on. I just got to move forward. So today we will do the top five songs from the week of Sarah Dillon's birth, which are alternately horrible and fantastic, by the way. So we'll get to those. And I'm also going to play something. I've got this whole thing going on where I'm cleaning out the basement, or rather Laura is cleaning out the basement. And so, because the basement, we've talked about the junk drawer phenomenon on this show, and it's that drawer underneath the microwave where you just sort of, it doesn't matter what it is. And you can get, can't you, just an amazing amount of things. It's like when it's cold outside and you want to take out the trash. Did you ever notice how you can violate every law of physics with this kitchen trash can? Because you can get more in there. I mean, the cubic weight of the earth itself can fit inside your kitchen trash can when you're really determined to not actually have to take. And then by the time you do have to take it out, it's so heavy that the bag cannot support itself. And it's, you know, and it's always the cheap kind of bag that doesn't have any handles, and so you're ripping straight through it and everything. So there's three areas in your house in which you know, the internal mass just increases exponentially every week. One of them is that trash can in the kitchen. The other is the drawer underneath the microwave. The third is either the basement or the attic. And with me, it's the basement because the basement is just sort of like, the basement is sort of like a landfill inside your home where you don't, it's sort of a thing you'll worry about some other time. For now, you'll just put everything in there. Landfill, not my problem, not the problem of my grandchildren, not the problem of their, it'll be the problem of some group of people that lives 350 years in the future, when everything is just poisoned with radon and dirty diapers. That's what the basement is. She's put everything in the basement. And when you work in radio or any career where you're moving a lot, I think it's exponential because you are constantly moving, repacking, unpacking, moving, repacking, unpacking. And you would think that every time you moved, unpacked, repacked, that you would sort of trim it down a little bit and you'd become a little bit more Spartan. Well, that's not the case. Because for me, every time I moved, I somehow just, it was like dragging duct tape along a kitchen floor. I just accumulated more and more stuff. Anyway, so it just reached this point of critical mass over the weekend where Laura and I had to start cleaning out the basement. And just going through my radio stuff alone, I mean, the number of radio t-shirts that I've got, because I have this thing of keeping one t-shirt from every radio station where I've worked at, because it's kind of a long-standing joke for people in radio that you're really only in it for the free t-shirts. But I mean, it's kind of cool, but it's kind of horrifying. It literally, it's like 3 feet high, the number of bad t-shirts. T-shirts that I will never wear again. And t-shirts that are horrible. T-shirts that have the tackiest design. T-shirts that look like they were done at one of those, like, fluorescent spin, you know, paint, do your own, like, Lloyd Center kind of thing, where it's like a bad pixelated black and white photo of you and your baby mama. The t-shirts will look just like that. My basement is full of that kind of stuff. But endless boxes of radio things and VHS tapes, which I kept for no readily apparent reason. So as I was going through all that stuff, I found a song that we're going to play later, bottom of the hour. And I feel bad because it's like, it's some song that a listener obviously sent me that I never got to. I don't think I ever played it once. So we'll get to the bottom of the hour. So I don't want to get behind like we did yesterday. Yesterday there was the terrible paucity of news here. So let's pay a quick visit here to the Ministry of Truth. We'll break at the bottom. We'll come back. We will have Lisa Goddard at 11:45. Later on, we will have Jim Roop. We'll have Ed McCarthy. We'll have all of that coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the man, the legend, the way of life, the talent. He is your personal savior. He's at the Ministry of Truth. He's preparing news as we speak. He's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
This is the first time we've ever actually gotten to the news at the beginning.
I'm trying to make more room.
He's caught a little off guard.
He's not off guard. Tim is always prepared and ready to roll.
We really don't have any.
I'm trying to turn over a new leaf.
Maybe you should let us know about that new leaf before you turn it.
I tried to give you a good 15 seconds. I tried to telegraph it.
Okay, well.
There's a pile of news like 6 inches deep that we've never gotten to.
He's reading his morning paper.
I'm sorry.
Gelatinous jellyfish-like creatures that are coating the beaches of Massachusetts and New Hampshire may look and feel disgusting, but they're harmless, say Marie experts. New England salps, as they're called, are about a centimeter long but reproduce quickly and attach to one another to form long colonies in the ocean.
Ew.
Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie have agreed to film a new series of the reality show The Simple Life. The show has been put in danger by a year-long feud that saw the pair filming their section separately. But it has been confirmed that they will play the role of children's camp counselors in the newest adventure set to begin production next month. The show's executive producer, John Murray, says the thing the viewers love is the two girls together.
Okay, I don't know anybody that watched The Simple Life past the first. The only one I ever watched was the one they were on the farm, which is what? That was the first? Wasn't that the first season? What was the one where they lived with the farmers?
I've never watched it. I don't know.
That's not true. You watched the first season, didn't you?
No, I watched like the first episode and that's it. I don't know.
And there was never anybody, like we were never even able to figure out what it is that
they're so
unlikable. Fighting.
They're so terrible. They're such terrible people. I couldn't watch it.
That really is true. I mean, that's the thing. This is one of my constant little maxims on this show is that the people will always say that television doesn't tell you the truth, but I think that that's not true. I think that the camera doesn't lie. I think you can tell when someone is a horrible person just by watching them on camera. And the example I always use is, I mean, there's Bill Clinton and there's Richard Nixon and there's JFK. I mean, everybody talks about that, that Nixon-Kennedy debate. And they talk about how the camera fooled everybody into thinking that Kennedy was the better person, even though Nixon had a better grasp on the issues, blah, 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 blah. But you go back and you watch that, and man, you watch Richard Nixon on camera, and the guy just looks like a weaselly bastard. He just looks like a slimy car salesperson. You did it with Bill Clinton, and we were right in both of those cases. And man, you see Paris Hilton on camera, and you nailed it when you said that she is beaky and hateful. And that's exactly what she is.
It wasn't Nicole Richie. I mean, all they did was, you know, make fun of poor people and laugh and break stuff, you know?
See, and the thing about it is, it's like, as happy as we were when Shannon Mochler punched Paris Hilton in the face or wherever that was, did those pictures ever even come out?
No.
It was last week. As happy as we were when that happened, think about how happy we're going to be when something really, really terrible happens to one or both of them. I mean, wouldn't you love to see Nicole Richie just kicked in the face by a horse while she's trying to shoe it? I mean, it was re-satisfying on so many levels. So, and we never did figure out why they were even fighting. It's one of those things that you think that somebody would have revealed that by now, but that's another one of those celebrity things that I shouldn't worry about, but I do. It bugs me that I don't know. And it's like the Tom Cruise baby, the Suri Cruise pictures. I have no personal emotional investment, or I shouldn't, in the pictures of the Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes as alleged baby. And yet we were all here agitating to see them.
Well, and I still want to see them because those pictures are released and nobody's still ever seen it.
No. And that's my thing with Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton. There's no logical reason why I should have to know why they were quarreling with each other. But it's one of those things that nags at me. All right. Well, let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back.
A memorial service for crocodile hunter Steve Irwin will be available on a limited edition DVD November 14th. Proceeds from When He Changed the World will benefit Steve's Wildlife Warriors Fund to continue his work with endangered species and habitat protection and run his Australian Wildlife Hospital. Bonus features include interview footage of Irwin when he was alive with his family.
They have to know that it's interview footage of him when he was alive, as opposed to interview footage of him propped up somewhere in the corner. All right. We'll be interview footage of him duct taped to a wall. We'll be back after this. It's 503-733-2970. We come back around the corner. We'll talk about, I got the story about, it's all spun off of this business of Rosie O'Donnell showing her acres of pink flab on Nip/Tuck. We'll give away the Star Wars thing. Lisa Goddard at 11:45. The news hour at noon. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't even get me started on the porn. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up, we also got today's Week in Geek. We'll get to that. We'll give away, speaking of geeky stuff, I got this email. We'll give away the Star Wars stuff here in just a skosh. Lisa Goddard coming up at 11:45 to talk about our good friends, the North Koreans. We've got this. Where's my sounder for the thing?
Come on!
This is from Todd the Corpse. Rick, last night my wife, some friend... Listen to this. This is where he's trying to make me feel like a jerk. Rick, last night my wife, my friends, and I were volunteering at the Portland Rescue Mission serving food. Dinner with slices of bread with meat gravy on top. Oh, God. Note to self, never become homeless. Oh, God, it gets worse. Dinner with slices of bread with... I shouldn't be laughing. I'm not laughing at the homeless, but God... Dinner with slices of bread with meat gravy on top. We ran out of white bread. So we told people that wheat was the only option. What kind of backward freaking world are we living in? I don't understand the desire to take something that is fundamentally supposed to be firm and dry, like bread, and then to put goddamn gravy. I don't mean to get sidetracked a sentence into this email.
Delane and I went to the Portland City Grill yesterday, and they have, like, really cheap appetizers for the happy hour. And she got a piece of bread. I don't know what it was, but it had, like, soggy tomatoes on it.
See,
It was so wrong.
I don't understand.
I can understand maybe crispy bread, but it was like squishy bread.
But that's the thing. See, and I'm not cranky, by the way. I just feel passionately about my bread and the firmness and dryness of same. Here's the thing about bread. One is the way that they always advertise cereal. They always advertise cereal as stays crispy in milk. Crispy's not really a word, but I'm willing to overlook that right here to make a larger point. The point is that everyone knows that soggy bread or starch-like items are bad. Anything that is sort of a bread-like consistency is supposed to remain as dry, or firm at least, as possible. This idea, and it seems to be largely a southern slash really poor white trash thing, that you gotta take every bread-like item and then slather it in some sort of viscous goo until it just becomes the consistency of you know, like gravy. It's just bad. And it is always, or my mom would do this. My mom would do she would do the thing where she would get like a piece of bread and then she'd have the soft-boiled egg, you know, the egg with the liquid center right on the bread. It's just nothing but bad. Anyway, if you ever see me starving and it's a choice between starving or like a biscuit covered in gravy, you just put a bullet in my head.
No, that's an exception. No, biscuits
same
and
thing.
Gravy.
There's no difference between a biscuit and gravy and bread and gravy.
No way, because it doesn't have the same absorbency. Like, it doesn't just suck it in. It's
it doesn't have wings.
Good.
Okay.
It's not all spongy.
All right,
continue.
I got a whole, you know, but see, I got a whole, it's not a fetish, but it is a whole thing about this where it's like, I can't, for instance, here is why I am glad that I do not have to date me, because I know that I am very high maintenance about some things. For example, that I cannot eat sandwiches with untoasted bread. It doesn't matter. If I'm eating a sandwich, the bread, it has to be toasted. And you know why this is? It completely is a holdover from my childhood. If we're just going to plunge right into my neuroses, I'll tell you exactly why. It's because I was often dumped off at my grandmother's house, and my grandmother never met a sandwich that wasn't improved by two things. The use of Wonder Bread, which right there is enough to ruin any sandwich. I mean, Scotty eats a lot of Wonder Bread. Wonder Bread, and then just half the jar of mayonnaise. You know, and Wonder Bread is, it's essentially a spongy, pasty bread anyway. There really is no need to make it, to further its mushiness by putting a lot of condiments on it. And so I've completely overreacted as an adult, and I can't have any bread that's not toasted. The whole just weirds me out. Anyway, moving on. He says, we ran out of white bread at the Portland Rescue Mission, so we told people that wheat was the only option. I was a few stations down from where they were handing out the bread, so I was paying little attention, until I heard one 40-something amiable black man shout, quote, shoot, man, I don't care if it's black, white, or green. I'm like Captain Kirk. I like it all, end quote. No one else but me understood what he was talking about, so I began laughing hysterically. It was clear that he'd made this joke hundreds of times without anybody understanding, so when he finally saw a response from me, he riffed on it for a few more seconds, happy with himself and his Star Trek joke. When he got to the dessert station, I put a piece of chocolate cake on his tray and I said, that was the funniest thing I've heard all week. Here's some Uhura for you. Enjoy. It was brilliant, and I thought of you and your show immediately, because no one else anywhere would understand. Just thought I'd share that there are geeks everywhere, even among the homeless. Let's see, and real quickly. Rick, did Tim Riley just say that Paris Hilton and Nicole Simpson made up?
Correct. You agreed with him.
I didn't even hear it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Nicole Simpson dead? Well, you know, when it makes it easier to make him, I guess. What are you going to do? All right, it's 503-733-2. Line 70. All right, speaking of geeks, and I got to get this done before we move on to the Lisa Goddard thing.
Let me just... Daddy J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
Scotty J, how are you, sir?
Hey, good morning.
All right. So I'm here. I'm going to lay out this giveaway for you here because you seem to be a little confused about this. Okay. You are sort of like...
He's intense.
No, I just like to know exactly what's needed, what you want me to do. Same thing with Sounders, you know, all that stuff.
And I appreciate that kind of attitude, Scotty. I was telling Sarah, though, that you are sort of like a drill sergeant about this because I've tried to empower you to help the show move along and stay on schedule, but you're often like a very confused and befuddled drill sergeant. So I'm
new to the Marines.
Yeah, so I'm helping. Do you eat a lot of Wonder Bread?
No.
Do you eat white bread?
No, we got a lot of differences. I'm a wheat guy, and that's for health purposes.
Okay. All right. If you got to live long and enjoy that.
That's right.
You got to live long to enjoy that second life that you were telling Sarah and I about later on. When your kids
Scotty
leave
isn't
home.
Stuck in the suburbs.
We had this whole debate, and we don't have time to get into this now, but this discussion with you about whether or not you were... Because I was making the observation that you really, even if you ever lived in the city, you are a suburban man at heart. You have always been... You were probably suburban and 40 the day you were born. No offense. Some people are like that. And Scotty's, no, no, no. I used to live in the city. I've gone to Saturday Market. And I just...
That's a direct quote.
And to which Sarah responded, quite aptly, Scotty, your life is over. You are married and have two children, and you live in Beaverton. There is no more enjoyment of anything for you.
And then he told us that in a couple of years after his nine-year-old kid...
In a couple of years. When I kick my kid out at 12...
Life will be just starting again.
Yeah, okay. You keep telling
your
yourself that.
Your life starts at 50.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's if you're a tree.
Yeah.
all right. So here's what we're going to do. So I have today two pair of tickets to the Star Wars OMSI exhibit, which begins for the general populace this coming Saturday. I have also two. This is where we seem to go off the rails, you and I. In addition, each pair of OMSI tickets will come with a double disc. See how that works?
Yes.
They will come with a double disc set. Return of the Jedi.
So each person gets the ticket and a disc.
Okay.
And
so
it's a double
four, it's
disc
a double
set.
Thing.
There are four discs in sets of two.
Okay, now you're confused. You don't need to say that.
No, I got it.
You
I
understand
really,
it.
I
Repeat
that.
It back to me.
There are two discs for the DVD, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then there is one pair of passes. No. Watch. I got it. One pair of passes. One pair of passes to the OMSI Star Wars event with a dual disc DVD.
So teaching a mule to count.
Times two.
Yes.
That's correct.
See? Yes. Thank you. Okay. So we're going to do one of those later on. We're going to do one of them now. We'll try to anyway. We got, what, like 7-8 minutes till Lisa Goddard calls? So here's the deal. So I got this. Let me ask you this, Scotty, if I were to ask you this question. What female, did you see the Nip Tuck thing? Do you watch Nip Tuck?
No, but I heard about it just the other night.
Oh, man.
About,
did you see it on YouTube that Rosie O'Donnell?
I'll send you the YouTube link.
Yeah, there was some
shaking everything the good Lord give her.
This gal we were talking to the other night was describing
this
show.
This lady friend of ours.
And I immediately thought of you. This might be a show that you probably might like.
Nip Tuck?
Yeah, just due to the crazy stories.
It is pretty crazy. It's a good show.
I watched the first couple episodes, then I kind of lost track, and then it became like a serial killing show.
I watched the first season.
All I know is that Rosie O'Donnell and Christian Troy were having sex on the program.
Christian Troy, who was hot.
I like how you got to do like the upward trill.
No,
when
except for the whole like
fantastic
eyebrow waxing thing. He was on Charmed for a really long time.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
He's hot.
It's not just hot. He's hot. Moving on. So anyway, so there's apparently some scene where she's getting it on with this guy for $420,000, and she's covered by
Sarah, make that hurling sound.
A sheet.
That hair in the throat sound.
she's covered by a sheet, but apparently you can see the side of one of her massive thighs.
Oh.
I
haven't watched it.
We can watch it later.
No, I could not. Okay.
So anyway, so they've conducted this poll, though, asking people which female celebrity should never have a Hollywood love scene. And I typically don't do stuff like this because it's just because it eats up a lot of showtime and you never get the payoff because you can never get people to guess all of them correctly. So here's what we're going to do. They released this poll, and this came out yesterday morning, about which female celebrity should never have a Hollywood love scene. So what we're going to do is this. I'm not going to ask people if they can guess the number one response. It's the top 10 women based on this poll who should never have a Hollywood love scene. And so what we'll do is if somebody can guess number six, because Sarah got number one, which was Star Jones. And I'll give you that little hint right here. Because I asked her, I go, with female celebrities should never have... The sentence wasn't even out of my mouth. It's Star Jones.
Oh.
And Star... See, right? Because everybody has that reaction. Just a whole lot of... Yeah. So, we'll
and
see.
Rosie O'Donnell's not on the list.
And
right?
Rosie O'Donnell is not on the list. So what we'll do is we will take calls now. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970.
We have like a whole Star Wars prize pack going on here.
It is a prize pack, Sarah. So if you can guess the woman who is number six, and you are on your honor, by the way, not to get on the net and try to Google this, you little bastards. So this is an understanding between adults, between men, that you will not get online and try to find purloined answers somewhere.
Now, are we going to take them randomly, or do I get to know number six
you
is?
You do not get to know the winner, because I know you'll tip it. You'll get.
Okay,
I've never
seen this list. I'm not going to Google it, but I do want to take a guess just to
okay,
see
but
something.
Understand that I can't tell you whether you're right or wrong.
Okay, I just want to know if someone's on the list.
Okay.
Glenn Close.
No, first of all, Glenn Close is hot. Second
no,
of all,
no, no.
Glenn Close is hot. She's got a beaky nose, but that's not her fault. And she's, you know, the thing we were talking, who was we were talking about this yesterday? Kristen from accounting was here. Glenn Close has got Was this off the air? I can never remember. Whether
no,
these
we were
conversations...
talking about this on the air. We were talking about this yesterday.
I think it was off the air, though.
And you were talking about this at the
because we were talking about guys with gravitas.
I was talking about who?
You were talking about how the world gets confused between radio and reality as time
yeah,
goes on.
Kiki. We were talking about Kiki, specifically. But you had made the observation that Patrick Stewart had gravitas. He had a certain presence, a weight to him. And I said Morgan Freeman has that same thing, where he speaks and it's the voice of God. And I noted that that's a largely male trait, although there are women who have it. And I believe that Glenn Close has that, where she stares at you and you just feel intimidated. She's very masculine. And I don't know anything about her personal life, none of my business, but she does have a very sort of male vibe in her, but I find her hot in a weird way. And I think that's because my generation just remembers her getting nude on the sink with Michael Douglas, where she, and in the elevator.
So,
but that's the thing, is that movie just made me sick, so sick. That
Fatal
I
Attraction?
Just, yeah, I just can't even really look
at
it.
It's a terrible film, but she was hot. She was unbelievable, and she was hot in The Paper with Michael Keaton, too.
So are all these women, like, obese?
No. No, they're not.
Okay.
Some of them are the opposite of obese. No, this is not this is not a fat list. Are you reading through the back?
No.
Okay.
But now since you said that, I have more of them in my head.
Okay, so the question is, we had this poll, which female celebrities should never have a Hollywood love scene? If you are able to guess number 6 on the list, if you are able, and that is Lisa Goddard. So this will be a thing we have to take throughout the day. We will kind of get some of these. We'll take these as they come until someone gets it. We'll get a couple of these while we're screening Lisa Goddard here. Rick Emerson Show, who's this?
This is Chris.
Hey, Chris, what's your, have you got a guess here?
I do. I can't remember how to pronounce her last name, but Catherine Mannheim, I think, from...
Catherine Mannheim from The Practice?
Yeah.
Okay, can I just tell you?
Okay. Is he right or wrong?
No, he's not right. But, okay. But really, it's just, let's be honest, all these contests are just an opportunity for people to list things and then for me to comment on them. And we all know that this is true. Let's quit pretending otherwise. Catherine Mannheim is sexy. I'm not saying she's beautiful. I'm not saying she's hot in a conventional sense. I'm saying...
Not somebody I'd like to see in a love scene.
No, probably not. She's got a sex vibe. You can't deny that. Everyone knows this to be true. You know what it is? I hate to traffic in stereotypes here, but it's because she has what many people of size have. She has kind of a sort of an FU attitude. It's kind of like Roseanne Barr used to have. Roseanne Barr didn't have that anymore. Roseanne Barr's just got a crazy vibe. It's like a vibe of a shrieking, many-headed personality-ed hydra.
I think she has many personalities like that.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody... Who was talking about this the other night? Was it Donna Mike talking about this the other night? People don't really remember this now because the recent Roseanne history is just littered with all of her crazy behavior and her weird marriages and, you know, all of the crazy fake molestation allegations that she was making and everything and all this plastic surgery she had was really ill-advised. People do not remember that when when Roseanne Barr first came out, she was really cute. She really was, like, way back in like the mid to late 80s, like in the Domestic Goddess era. Very attractive woman, a big woman, but very cute nonetheless. And as time went on, she did that weird thing where she somehow got thinner, but it looked as though people had just sort of randomly whittled away sections of her. It didn't look good at all. The answer is not Cameron Mannheim, my friend. Thank you.
All right,
there you go. Thank you. All right, it's 503-733-2970. And she owns a restaurant in Utah as well, where they serve fried cow brains, just in case anybody wants to know. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show CNN radio correspondent and woman about town, Lisa Goddard on the Hill. How are you, Lisa?
Hey, how are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing all right. I am doing all right. It's a fantastic day. How are things? How's life?
I can't complain. Life is good.
Well, the day's not over yet, Lisa. So,
I'll hope.
So, I'm so
that
unsure.
Was a little creepy.
No, I'm just saying. I'm making sure the universe knows that we are not tempting fate. We are big believers in not tempting fate here. If I were to ask you whether or not North Korea actually set off a nuclear weapon, would you have an answer?
No.
Okay. Well, there you go. CNN, the voice of authority. I'm not trying to bust your chops. It's just interesting that nobody. It would seem like the United States at this point, some 50 years after Hiroshima, that we would have definitive ways to tell. Even underground, if there was a huge nuclear explosion set off. So does this mean that it was probably a dud or that it was small enough that we don't know?
That's the thing, is it was so small, according to most sensors, to South Korean sensors, especially, that it could have been something else because of the size of it. You know, you don't, someone kind of made this sort of metaphor, or I guess analogy rather, when you're looking at the waves of things happening underground, it's like you're sort of trying to listen specifically for a violin in a symphony that's full of, you know, brass horns. You know, so they're saying there's a lot of things going on underground at any given time, and you're looking for specific tremors to indicate this is a nuclear device. And they've got to sort through this and try it. Now, that's how they explain it. I'm not a nuclear scientist, as any nuclear scientist listening would be able to say. But that's my understanding of why they're having trouble figuring this out. And, in fact, in the last hour, our Jamie McIntyre at the Pentagon has been getting word from officials there that they're starting to lean toward a theory that somehow North Korea did not do what it wanted to do, that North Korea was intending to have a 4-kiloton nuclear explosion. Instead, they ended up with something much weaker, a 1-kiloton explosion. And in fact, apparently China was told by North Korea it was aiming for 4 kilotons, and U.S. officials apparently have confirmed that. So now the U.S. seems to be leaning toward this theory. Now, they're not going with it yet, but they think something went wrong. Now, of course, it's in the U.S. interest to put out that North Korea is not as strong as they say it is. So all of this you've got to take with all those fantastic grains of diplomatic salt, and in the middle of negotiations, no less, at the U.N., because at the same time, Russia is saying, no, it was a huge nuclear explosion. We've got the proof.
Yeah.
Whatever you say, that's the case. So it's a bit of a scientific mess.
Does the United States, and I am not a conspiracy buff, but does the United States have any motivation to just sort of, even if it is true, to just deny that it happened? Just to sort of deny North Korea the satisfaction of us all being terrified?
Yeah, I would think so. I think North Korea is shooting for leverage here. They're shooting to prove that they deserve a seat on the world stage and to say, listen, don't mess with me. You know, we've got nuclear capability, and it sure would be in the U.S. interest to say that's not true. We're not scared of you. You're all just a bunch of hucksters. But I don't think, I haven't used huckster in a long time. But I don't think I don't think that the U.S. can credibly say that. I think the farthest that they could go is to say, look, this North Korea is not fully capable yet, and I think most of the world realizes North Korea is not fully capable. They certainly can't get these nuclear devices. It doesn't seem small enough to fit on a missile, and of course that's the next major step. But the fact that they at least tried a nuclear explosion, perhaps had a nuclear explosion, is still a really serious issue. And Russia is saying today, regardless of how big the explosion was, exactly what the explosion was, they're saying, look, now there's 9 nuclear powers. We're saying North Korea, clearly, we need to face facts that they have some kind of nuclear capability, even if it's sort of they're crawling along at baby strength. They're in there, and we need to recognize that.
It's interesting you say 9, because I was going to ask you how many countries. Because I'm an ugly American, I don't even know how many countries there are in the world, frankly.
You've got 9 with the nuclear weapon capability. Now, that's including Israel, and Israel has never openly admitted to having nuclear weapons, but that's a very wink-wink, nudge-nudge kind of thing. Most of the world accepts or believes that Israel does, in fact, have nuclear weapons.
So I guess my question is, and I don't mean to sound, I don't know, daft about this, but I don't understand, really, what's so hard about getting away? I mean, we had that story after the fall of the USSR, where there was just hundreds of tons of plutonium just vanishing. Guys were taking their rivets and selling them on the street for vodka money. And so doesn't it strike you as a little odd that everybody doesn't have them by now? It doesn't really seem like it's especially difficult to find some guy in a back alley who's willing to sell you plutonium.
Well, I think it might not be too hard to get plutonium, get some small amount of plutonium in your hands, but the fact of the matter is processing it and specifically making it into a nuclear weapon. You have to take, there's different ways to do it, but you essentially have to take this ring of plutonium, make it into a sphere, and you have to have enormous, first of all, safety capabilities to make sure that your workers can do this. You can process it so that the workers end up staying alive while you're processing it, much less you also have to have incredible know-how to be able to do this and ignite the explosion around something that is splitting the atom and make that kind of thing small enough so that you can fit it on top of a missile. All of that is incredibly complex, and you can't do it in a garage. You know, so you gotta
Probably not. I mean, I tell you what.
Microsoft action there.
I was just going to say, we've got a room full of engineers across the hall here, about 5 feet away from me. Seriously, one of them just becomes embittered on just the right day, you know, and they get a telegram from Kim Jong-il. I mean, it's all over.
Is that it?
Just as a final question, and this may sound a little comical, but I don't really mean for it to be. I think it's a fair question. Everybody refers to Kim Jong-il as being crazy. But that's, I mean, is he really, or is he just a guy that doesn't care what anybody thinks of him?
You know, it's true. It's easy to say that this is a madman, but people who have covered him and also diplomats who have worked with him say that he's a very smart man, but obviously a tyrant, obviously a dictator. And they say he's someone who, I don't know if you want to say, like, maniacally powerful. Obviously, he has sort of a cult following that he's established in his country. But some people say, no, don't write him off as crazy. This is a man who's very smart. He has a poor country. He has a country that was vulnerable from the start, that started after a war with the superpower, with the United States involved. And from the get-go, his whole tactic has been to try and get any kind of leverage he could on the rest of the world. And that's been nuclear and military. So people say don't dismiss him as crazy. He's certainly not a very compassionate leader, it would seem, to his people. But don't dismiss him.
All right. Two things. A, yeah. I do admire your use of the word huckster. I would also suggest that you use ne'er-do-well at some point in your communications.
All right, I'll give it a try.
Ne'er-do-well is good. Also, if you get the opportunity to discuss me or this radio program with anybody today, perhaps Laura Caviezel or somebody of that ilk.
How's it going with Laura? Our producer, is everything okay?
Everything seems to be fine. I understand she's picking out some lovely China patterns.
This is so nice because there had been some tension in the past, so I'm very happy. Maybe you guys will get invited to the wedding.
You know, we're all about going along to get along, Lisa. We are all about smooth communication and respect among our, you know, our fraternity of our broadcast brothers and sisters here.
Well, I'm so delighted to hear it.
If you do get the chance to discuss me or this program with somebody, try to work in the phrase, he is maniacally powerful.
All right.
All right, thank you so much. All right, Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, CNN radio correspondent on the Hill. Thank you. 503-733-2970.
Real smooth.
Long way to go for a joke.
Yeah.
Look, I got to try to chisel in my comedy wherever I can. It's not easy what I do.
I wonder if Lisa really likes Laura.
I think that I'm not going to have her say New Direction.
Yeah, because I can't be the only one. Because I like Laura.
Well, you know, Roop has made his feelings about Laura pretty clear.
Yeah.
And Baumgarten, who knows? Baumgarten is with the wind. You never know what that guy is. Gets up on the wrong side of the bed, and he's, you know, you get the feeling he's looking to shiv a guy. So I really don't understand. And then Ed McCarthy just seems just so happy or drunk most of the time that just nothing really bothers him at all. Nothing phases him anyway. Bob Costantini is terrified for his job and afraid that he's going to come and see his locker cleaned out. Really, Lisa, I think, is the only wild card there. So I really don't know the answer to that.
Huh.
Let's see. We should get a couple more of these. Thank you, Scotty. We'll get a couple more of these. I meant to get to this earlier, but then, of course, things got away from us, as they sometimes do. We are giving away a pair of passes to see the OMSI Star Wars exhibit this coming weekend. That comes including a double disc Return of the Jedi DVD set. And so we've got this list, the poll they did about female celebrities who should never have a Hollywood love scene. So if anybody can guess number 6, you'll score this this pass and DVD set. Jim, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, brother?
Hey, how about B. Arthur?
No, but congratulations, though. We really... I'd have a sounder for anytime anybody uses B. Arthur. Because she is sort of the female Ernest Borgnine, though. You know what I mean? Just sort of a go-to, comedically speaking.
Is she even on the list?
No, she's really not on the list, which is kind of amazing when you consider some of the people who are. And she's still alive, so it is conceivable. I mean, it is theoretically possible that even now, Quentin Tarantino is somewhere filming a quirky movie in which he will attempt to resurrect her career for kitsch value. So beware, my friend.
All right.
Not on the list.
Okay.
Thank you. There you go. That's B. Arthur. We'll do one more.
Not on the list at all?
Not on the list at all. Well, it only goes to 10.
Can I see the list?
Other, I mean, like, I will say this, that there's the top 10 and then there's other. So she could theoretically fit into the other category. See number 6 there? Yeah. Orion.
Yes.
Hello. How are you, sir?
Pretty good.
What's up, brother? What do you got?
I'm going to take a shot at it. I'm going to say Dionne Warwick.
Let me ask you this. Dionne Warwick, I believe to be a hideously unattractive woman, but I really have to say this. Have you seen photos of her? And this is not going the way that I normally go with these conversations. The photos of her from back in the day, you think she looks bad now. I mean, it's not so much horse teeth as it is like a whole stable full of teeth. I mean, it's unreal. You turn her sideways and her teeth, she looks like one of those, she looks like a Dr. Seuss character. I mean, her teeth stick out, I'm guessing, like a good 3-4 feet from her face. It's unreal. No, have you seen?
No.
It's like it is like you've taken George Thorogood's jaw and, like, combined it with John Elway's jaw. And then also combined it with Francis the Talking Mule, bam, shoved it all into her mouth. Which is true, because when she was younger, she was not an unattractive woman. But, man, those choppers have got to go. They're huge. I mean, I don't understand how she was able to eat for the first 20 or 30 years of her life without inadvertently just taking off bits of her hand or the rest of her face. I mean, it's unreal. So over time, either her head has gotten a lot bigger, or she's had her teeth, I suspect. Now, I can't prove this, but I do suspect that Dionne Warwick at some point just had all of her teeth pulled. And I'm serious about this. Had them all pulled and just wears false teeth. Which is a thing that, you know, not so long ago was a remedy for, you know, a lot of people in this country. If you were poor, of limited means, or I've thought that my mom had that done. But I think Dionne Warwick had it done for cosmetic, because you can't really shrink your teeth. It's not like China's jaw where you can just break it and make it smaller again. I don't think there's any breaking your teeth and making them smaller. I think she they put her in a chair for like 3 days and they just pulled every one of those things and they gave her some new, they couldn't do anything about the jaw, which is still, I'm guessing, 3 or 4 feet long, but the teeth themselves are smaller now. No, she's not on the list though, but, it's a good guess. She really ought to be on the list, but she is not. So.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
All right. There you go. It's 503-733-2970. Take a break here. Come back. We will begin the AM 970 noon news hour. We're giving away, actually, if we're able to, we're giving away a couple pair of passes to the Star Wars OMSI exhibit this come weekend. Coming up later on, CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy from New Orleans, Jim Roop. Later on, Dennis Spitzenbarger and the top 5 songs from the week that Sarah Dillon was born. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.